Get rolling now. Here's Tom Gimbel, the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network. Always good to hear you, Tom. How are you today?
I am doing great. There's a little recovery in the market, John. The world's not ending.
Mr. Sunshine, that's what we call him. That's Tom Gimbel for you. What was your reaction? What was your reaction yesterday, Tom, when it was happening?
Well, obviously, it trails back to the job numbers on Friday. And so what we saw was revisions for a couple of the previous months. We saw the lowest number at 114,000 jobs that we've had in a long, long time. And unemployment shot up 0.2 of a point to 4.3% unemployment. So when you see those numbers, to expect that the market's gonna take a little bit of a hit isn't unexpected.
A little bit of a hit is not the way it was described yesterday. Give me some context. So what do you think happened in light of the fact that a lot of that loss is coming back today? But, I mean, is the world changed now or what?
No, I don't think so. I think what you and I have talked about this a lot is people want absolutes. The economy is going to be fabulous. The economy is going to be a recession. It's going to be all Republican or all Democrat, and none of it is true. We're in a new world where it's not a bull market every single day, week, month, quarter, year. And we've been in one for the most part for 25 years. A couple blips, but really it's been an unbelievable ride since the dot-com boom of 1999-2000. And so what I see from this is saying, okay, interest rates not being at zero are finally starting to take its toll on the stock market. And what are we going to do? We're now going to lower interest rates in September. The Fed will do that by 25 basis points, maybe even 50. And then we'll get a sugar high for the end of the year. And people will think it's going to be boom, boom, boom again. And that won't last either.
Yeah, I think that a recession is nigh. I don't know that I think that at all, but I'm certainly hearing that.
Yeah, it's if the reason you want to have interest rates above zero is so when you get to a point where the market dips and the economy stalls, you can lower them, which fuels investment, fuels consumer spending, fuels M&A, merger and acquisition work in corporate America, and then that gets the economy chugging again. So we've got this lever to pull to lower interest rates. So I just think it's going to be a little bumpy, meaning the stock market won't be growing by such high percentage points as it had, but we're really, the economy overall, it's not a disaster situation.
You have a rather positive outlook based on what happened yesterday and is happening today. I wonder what this means about jobs and hires, though. Is it going to be more difficult to get a job? Will there be a flood of applicants out there, Tom?
So a couple things, John. Number one, we're going to see, my belief is, unemployment will bump up probably to about 4.5 or 4.6 over the course of the next 30 or 60 days. And what that's going to do is a few things. Number one, you're going to have remote work is going to slowly dissipate, and you're going to get back to 4 days in the office. Friday will remain a remote day. And I think that'll be for about 80 to 85% of companies out there. And you'll see people who aren't happy about that, who will quit thinking there's something better. So the job market will actually open up in some ways because people won't want to do certain things, number one. Number two, for the A players, they're always going to have job opportunities. Companies are always hiring in select roles. They're just not doing it in mass. When unemployment pops up, companies just put the brakes on a little bit and they slow down mass hiring. And so that affects everybody across the board. Where I've started to see the biggest slowdown now in my conversations with corporate leaders is on kids out of college, recent graduates getting hired. That slowed down. And that is a real red flag. Now, the good news is that that's the first area that bounces back, number one. Number two, if we can get away from the entitlement philosophy for some of these 20-somethings and they realize any job is a good job, let's get my foot in the door, that we're going to get back in time to where people have to earn things. It's not just entitlements. And so I think that right now it's not the greatest time, but it reminds me of the mid-90s coming out of college, out of that early 90s recession, where it's good, not great, and you just have to be willing to work your tail off.
Sectors that are still hiring, healthcare and social assistance took the lead. although those aren't always the most desirable jobs. I think I know what social assistance means. Other growing sectors include construction, leisure, and hospitality. It's interesting. We were talking about this earlier with the jobs or labor analyst who said that it's interesting that construction seems to be doing well, manufacturing less so. I don't know if you've seen that too, but manufacturing less than construction. Still plenty of road work, probably still a lot of residual dollars from all the federal spending on projects. So construction is doing better than manufacturing.
Yeah, we haven't seen manufacturing. I really thought 3 years ago that we were going to see Made in the USA bounce back in a big way on the manufacturing side, and we just haven't seen that. And I think it just goes to show the goldfish mentality of the American consumer that you forget what happened and you buy what's cheap.
Also, there's a piece I'm looking at about transferable skills, which are probably something that we should all be asking ourselves, do we have if a labor market's going to become tighter, right?
Yeah, I put it this way, John. Everybody has transferable skills. The question is, does everybody want to use them in a job that they don't believe they want? I mean, most skills are transferable. Most people's mindsets and mentality, that's the roadblock.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, you get somebody who's really good at, say, marketing, and there are no marketing jobs. They probably have a really dynamic personality. They probably could go into sales and do really well. However, they don't want to make cold calls. They don't want to be in that type of business. They believe that they only should do what they majored in or what they want to do. And the transferable skill is the personality, the ability to talk to people, how to convince somebody of a different way of thought. But because they think they're marketing people, they're not going to go do sales.
Still,
and that's a mental roadblock, not a transferable skill roadblock.
Still, would you not be surprised, though, if some agencies or businesses thought, you know what, we were going to put 100 more people in Chicago, or we were going to add another salesperson, but I'm just going to hit pause for the time being, maybe till the end of the year, something like that. Is that a... That would not surprise you, would it?
Not one bit. But I also see this, is that especially with interest rates going to be lowered in September, is that what ends up happening is the big companies will slow down and maybe even do some downsizing like we saw Intel do. But that just it creates opportunity for small and medium-sized businesses. And so you're going to get people that it may not pay as much, right? Maybe you were going to get a job in this crazy economy out of college for $65,000 a year at a big company. And now maybe you're going to get offered a job for $40,000 a year at a startup company. Yes, it's a huge delta, a huge difference. However, the opportunity may be better in the long run for you. And to think otherwise is just short-sighted.
You think interest rates are going to get dropped to half a point, or is it more a quarter point?
No, I think 25 basis. I think a quarter point.
You then agree that an emergency meeting of the Fed to drop it 0.75 was not necessary, was not a good idea?
I think ridiculous. I think, again, we're still living in a time since past. Like, this is a one-day drop is not something of this percentage is nothing that we need to go crazy about. So I think we just need to slow our roll a little bit and let things digest. We're in such a social media, know everything in 30 seconds and make rash decisions. And sometimes it's best to just let things settle down and have a clear head.
Dow's up 586 points right now, so it is getting some of the 900-point loss back today. But what are you hearing from hiring managers, though, or for business executives? Were they spooked? Are they a little leery right now?
No, it's more of they're just not moving at warp speed anymore. So it's we're going to hire some people, but it's either going to be for very specific positions, number one. Number two, we're not going to do mass hiring. And number three, we want to be very careful on backfilling positions. And that means if somebody leaves, it's not an automatic replacement, that sometimes you look at how can we reconfigure the department and maybe bring somebody in at a different role. And it's just a different way, probably a more thoughtful way to do it, actually. And I think less helter-skelter. I think a lot more strategy involved. And we're moving in with AI, like you and I have talked about so many times. We're moving into a new era, the same way it was 20 years ago with the internet and e-commerce, and that you have to be thoughtful and you have to think about what's best, not just for the company, but for the employees that are still there, and how to make sure that you don't ever have to do layoffs again.
45 seconds left. Is it your opinion that if you have a job, you should almost always be thinking about another job, your next job?
I totally disagree with that. I think that the best way to make yourself marketable for another job is to excel at the job you have. And if your brain is thinking about what's next, it's like dating somebody while you're thinking about somebody else you want to marry. It's just not a recipe for success in the relationship.
That's Tom Gimbel with Business and Dating Advice. He's the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network. We'll talk next week, Tom.
Hey, John, just give another shout out for that Misericordia Days. We talk about business all the time, but philanthropy and giving back and Misericordia is one of Chicago's best kept things for people less fortunate, and they do a wonderful job. So big shout out to those folks.
Are they out at the intersections with the vests and the canisters this week or something?
I don't think they start this week, but I heard the advertisement on the radio of Misericordia Days coming up, so it's got to be coming soon. And I'm going to do a Google search and check out the WGN website and see if I find anything there, too.
I know my friend Lou Manfredini will fill me in on that, too. Okay, thanks for the shout out on that.
Yep, bye-bye.
Tom Gimbel from LaSalle Network. Dennis Rodkin is here, residential real estate reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. It's always fun when you come in, Dennis. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John. I'm happy to be here.
Just to talk about specific properties or trends, and we'll do that today. But in general, do you have a reaction to yesterday's drop in the markets? And do you think that's going to resonate in a noticeable way on the rental or resale markets in Chicago?
No, I don't think it is. I mean, as you know, it's sort of a short-term. We're not in a place yet to panic about the stock market. I think what we're waiting to see is, do interest rates come down appreciably? You know, in the last couple of months, the last couple of years, we've been hearing sort of daily, oh, interest rates are the highest they've been in 3 weeks. They're the lowest they've been in a month. But what we really need is to see, are they going to go back to where they were for most of the 21st century? They're very likely not to. But how much farther down will they fall? And are they going to stay at a low, a current low, a recent low?
Well, if the Fed reduced it by a quarter point, which may yet still be what they do in September, that wasn't going to change the real estate market much, was it?
No, I don't think one cut will change it much. But if we get 2, 3, 4 cuts at their subsequent meetings.
So in the long run, maybe this works out pretty good for the real estate market.
This fall in the stock market?
Well, this eventual drop in interest rates.
It probably would.
If one precipitated the other, then at least that'll maybe get some people out of their houses, those with money.
Yeah, it might. Although, as you know, what we've been seeing is high-end people have still been buying. We have sold quite a few very high-end sales this year in the Chicago area. It really is pretty comparable to 2023. It's not comparable to 2022, which was a peak, which was a huge run-up. But we're still seeing quite a few sales in that $4 million and up range.
Because
it's the million and below. Pardon me?
Because they have cash?
Because they have cash, yeah. Well, so if this stock market route is extended, then they may feel less wealthy and they may not have the cash to put into houses. But again, so far it seems like a short-term thing.
Okay. So either end of the economic spectrum is maybe where you want to be if you have a lot of money. But also if you're buying a $200,000 starter home in Chicago land, is that still a busy market?
It's been slower, and because those people are so affected by interest rates.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how much house I can get really is determined by the interest, or really is guided by the interest rate I'm paying when I'm down at that level of purchase. And so there have been a lot of people who've said, well, I think I'll just continue to rent because I can't get much house at these current interest rates. But one of the things to keep in mind is we're a couple of years into this interest rate environment, and what we're going to find out is, do people decide, okay, it's not going back to the early 2020s. Interest rates aren't going back to the early 2020s, and I need to buy what I can afford at these current rates.
Home prices have stayed high.
Home prices have continued growing quite a bit. In July, home prices hit it was the most expensive month to buy a house in the Chicago area, in the city of Chicago, and nationwide.
Ever?
Peak median price, or I shouldn't say peak, because the next month could be higher. But highest median prices in the city, the region and the nation in July.
What are some of those numbers? Do you have them handy?
Yes, I do. Let's see. In the 9-county metro area, the median sale price in July was $375,000, which was a record. In the city, it was $379,000, just higher than the metro. And nationwide, the median home price was $426,900 in July. This, too, was the highest ever monthly price. And one of the things to keep in mind is in the Chicago area, summer prices tend to be higher than winter prices. We tend to sort of go cyclically because winter is just a very different creature here. But we have seen in recent years that we just get higher and higher each summer. We may go down August, September. The prices might be lower, but they will still be running at records.
So are people putting 20% down? If it's $375,000, is many above or below that line? Homes for sale, that's the value, $375K. Then right. I need $75,000 with 20% down.
I don't think most are putting 20. They're putting 10 or less. 5 to 10, I think, is what most people are putting down.
Really? And yeah. Lenders are cool with that?
Yeah. Well, in part because, you know, people who are buying a $375,000 house, how long does it take them to save one-fifth of that, about $50,000?
That's my point.
Put down as a down payment.
Well, let's see. Oh, yeah. Well, 10% of $375,000 is $37,500, but 20% would be $75,000.
About
that sounds like a lot of money to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and very few people, especially in this economy, can save that much to put down. Generally, lenders are going in the 5 and 10% range.
Illinois ranks last at keeping rich people from moving out. So, in other words, more rich people are moving out of our state than any other state? Is that true?
Well, the way this paper phrased it, for every two people who move out, every two people with a $200,000 income or more who move out, one moves in. So we're less than one moves in. So we're not replacing half of the people we lose. And that is the worst record among the 50 states and Washington, D.C. This was data for 2022 that just came out in the last few weeks. And, you know, it's not a huge surprise. We know that we are losing people. We are losing wealthy people. But 2022 was when Caterpillar left, when Boeing left, when Ken Griffin left.
Yeah.
So it was kind of the heyday of high-end people. Both of those two corporations I mentioned took a lot of high-paid executive jobs with them. And Ken Griffin, it wasn't only Ken Griffin, but the people who worked for him. So it's not a huge surprise when you look at this data.
Why do you think that is, Dennis?
Well, of course, we lose people because of climate, but the thing that differentiates us from and the other states that were at the what you'd have to call the bottom of this list if you're losing the most wealthy people is taxation. Property taxes are high, estate taxes are high.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of states. I know that Minnesota had, when I was there, a budget surplus. Imagine that. Illinois does not.
Right.
But when people leave Illinois for Florida, where they don't have to pay an income tax, right? But I wonder if mitigating that is the quality of education or, I don't know, other social services that states do or don't provide in places where they have fewer taxes.
Well, I think a lot of the people who leave are the people who can afford to or are in a life stage where they can leave. And I'm more likely to leave for Florida when my kids are out of school.
Yeah, right. Right.
But because I've reached a level of income or because I've reached a level of age where it's okay to move. So education may not quite be the issue for me. And I'm looking at paying a very high estate tax in Illinois, and I want to be somewhere else when the time comes.
So I wonder what we do about that, right? I mean, is that a problem for legislators to fix or... Is that just, I mean, because in Minnesota where taxes, they got taxes in Minnesota, but they also have a budget surplus. Anyway, the line was up there. Yeah, but look what you're getting.
Right.
It's a very high quality of life and living. And I don't know if we have that in Illinois.
Well, I think one of the things people talk about a lot in Illinois is so much of our taxation goes to debt service.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
pensions. So I may not be getting, if I were paying taxes for super great roads and that sort of thing, schools that perform really well, I may complain less than if I think a lot of my taxation is going to pensions and debt service on the pension debt, pension obligation.
So this is your story, right? Illinois ranks last in keeping rich people from moving out?
That's my story, but it's not my data. It's based on a report that checked this based on census data.
But it was your writing that noted that Ken Griffin left for a variety of reasons. And I'm sure taxes were one of them, although he already was living in Florida. His family was in Florida, right? So the big Ken Griffin, I'm moving because Illinois is so lousy, was quite a gesture on his part. But it's not like he was just throwing darts at a map. He already had his roots in family.
He had a root there, right. Yeah, he had grown up in Florida, but he did. Again, we're talking about people with incomes of $200,000 or more are what contributed to this data. So it's not just Ken Griffin. It would be everybody from Citadel who was transferred or moved voluntarily from Chicago to Florida.
I understand why people would leave Illinois, particularly if they had the luxury of being able to. You happen to include, it was also the year that Chicago retired Tribune columnist John Cass moved over the state line to Northwest Indiana. That may be one of the most celebrated moves to Northwest Indiana we've seen in our lifetimes. It is not known, you write, whether Cass was making over $200,000 a year, but as a retiree, he's part of another group of Illinoisans that's had a hard time, that Illinois had a hard time keeping. And that's duly noted. Okay, more about that, but also more about some specific pieces of real estate. Dennis often talks to us about that. We'll ask him about some of those in a minute. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. We've got more business news now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A Chicago startup that helps make changing jobs easier has secured new funding. Wen raised $4.6 million in a seed round led by B Capital. Wen is a post-employment job support platform that assists exiting workers with severance packages and insurance options. The company also helps employers reduce costs and risks associated with COBRA. The platform is powered by artificial intelligence. Wen claims to be redefining the employee exit process to benefit both employees and employers. ThoughtWorks, a Chicago-based technology consulting firm, is going private. The move comes less than 3 years after the company went public. A London-based private equity firm is buying the remaining stock at a fraction of the initial public offering price. According to Crain's, the IPO price was $21 a share in 2021 and is down now to about $4.30 a share. The company has struggled as a public company with declining revenue. In the first half of this year, ThoughtWorks burned through $45 million. ThoughtWorks has blamed economic uncertainty in the IT services sector for the slump. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
This is the Business of Food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you, and let's begin with this from Fiddler on the Roof.
Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match!
And on the phone is a matchmaker.
Yeah, we actually have a matching program.
But instead of matching people looking for love, he and his company match farms with farmers.
It's like setting up an arranged marriage. Instead of between husband and wife or spouses, it's two non-family farm partnerships.
More about how that works after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Mike Downey is on the phone. He's a farm transition consultant working with
Next Gen Ag Advocates. It's actually founded by two farmers. We're doing a lot of non-family connections, transitions, retiring farmers that don't have a successor.
And there are a lot of farmers who are in that boat.
For every farmer over the age of 65, there's one farmer under the age of 35.
Right now, Mike and NextGen have three big properties they're trying to match: a 5,000-acre grain farm in northeast Iowa, a 3,500-acre farm in east central Illinois, and in northwest Illinois, a 2,000-acre grain and livestock operation whose owners are looking for a special type of person to take it over.
They have a strong regenerative farming philosophy, so they would really like to find a young farm couple that shares in that.
Money is a big problem. Even at an average per acre price of $15,000, which may be a little low, that 2,000-acre farm is $30 million.
The capital required to get into farming is probably the number one deterrent and challenge for young farmers.
So in many cases, it becomes, let's make a deal with farm owners willing to work with buyers.
You know, some of them would just prefer to offer a more attractive option for someone to transition in, knowing that that might also help them with an exit strategy, you know, from a tax standpoint.
If you're interested in taking over a farm, Mike Downey is ready to make a match.
NextGen Ag Advocates, nextgenag.us.
On the food calendar today is National Root Beer Float Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Dennis Rodkin is here from Crane's Chicago Business. I don't know about the Lake Geneva mansion you wrote about. Tell me about this.
Well, you know, if you have ever taken one of those circle tours of the lake,
yeah,
you've seen this one.
Yeah. There's a bunch of beautiful houses.
Yeah. This one stands out, and it's always noted when you're on those tours. It's called Aloha Lodge. And people who have been on that tour on the south side of Lake Geneva would have seen it. It's got a big two-story section with pillars that go up two stories. And then it's got two long arms that go out. And it's always described on those tours. Well, it just sold for $21.85 million. Mm. It came on the market in May of 2023 at $35 million. Price was cut to about $28 million, and again, it just sold for $28.85. One of the things to know,
$21.85 million. From 35 to 22, so they took a $13 million haircut on their asking price.
Yeah, it sold for about 62% of what they're originally asking. The family, so it was sold by the family of Harold Byron Smith, who had bought it in 1998. Did a lot of renovation. He died in 2022. He was from the family that founded Northern Trust, Illinois Tool Works. He was a high-level guy. He was the chairman of the Illinois Republican Party for several years in
the
1990s.
And the Drake Hotel, right?
Well, so that's who built it. Let me get on this. So first of all, selling it for 21.85 from 36 is not a big surprise. A lot of the renovation was about 10 years ago. Nevertheless, at 21.85, this is more than twice the highest price we've seen in the Chicago area this year. Highest price so far in Chicago, $9.3 million. Highest price in Lake Geneva this year, $21.8 million. Huh. Big difference. Yes, built by Tracy Drake and his wife, Ann. Tracy and his brother, John, built the Drake Hotel. They built the Blackstone Hotel. They built this in 1900. And it's called Aloha Lodge because they were friendly with, I'm not going to try to say her name because I can't pronounce the Hawaiian, but she was the first queen, last sovereign of Hawaii before United States fruit businesses pushed her off the throne and got Hawaii annexed by the United States. So there's a reason it's called Aloha Lodge. It's also, you know, a very welcoming place, which the term Aloha refers to.
Plus, do they have little tiki torches out front, which
I believe they might. Or you could.
Yeah.
Since you saved $13 million on buying it, you can buy a lot of tiki torches yourself.
They weren't upside down on this property, though, right? I mean, I'm sure they made money on it.
He paid about $3.8 million in 1998. I don't know what he spent on renovations. I'd be very surprised if they were upside down on it.
What's it got in there? What do you get in a $22 million mansion?
You get a pool. I think you get 12 bedrooms. It's about 16,000 square feet of living space.
Wow.
There's an outbuilding that had a model railroad in it. One thing I haven't been able to find is,
nice.
did the model railroad convey with the property, or did you just get the empty build? You know, do you get a little train set with this house?
But the toy train stays with the family. Well, would you say acre for acre, the most expensive houses in our listening area, let's include Lake Geneva and Wilmette and Hinsdale, wherever. I wonder where you would just house for house.
Well, I think right now, because we've seen these high, you know, there was another very high price sale when Driehaus's estate sold for $29 million a couple of years ago. I think Lake Geneva would be it. Lake Geneva lakefront property.
Yeah, well, sure.
They've been selling for more than Winnetka or Lake Forest lakefront property.
Brendan and I drove by Burr Ridge the other day, and it's funny because on one side was Burr Ridge, on the other side wasn't. Wow, the Burr Ridge side was very nice. Some of those homes, and sometimes on busy streets too, by the way, which I never understand. If I'm going to be, the day I build a $6 million house, it is not going to be on County Line Road.
On a four-lane road,
I don't understand that. But they all seem to be happy, and nobody's complaining.
And when is that day that you're building your $6 million house, John?
Thursday, which is weird. All right. It's nice to have you here, Dennis Rodkin. You read him in Crane's Chicago Business. He joins us frequently on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, John.